everybody. Welcome to Remembering Ourselves. I'm your host, Colin Mutchler. Excited to be here on Cows FM 92.5, Occidental, California. Got a great show with for you today. Exciting guest, Drew Farley, which I'll introduce in a bit. But before I do, let me just go ahead and do my official responsibilities. I want to read a few public service announcements. As you all know, Cows only can provide this service with the support of underwriters and support from the community. So first place I wanted to give a shout out to is the Sonoma County Historical Society. The Sonoma County Historical Society promotes Sonoma County's diverse heritage through education, preservation, and community engagement. Since 1962, the Society has been collecting, preserving, and retelling Sonoma County's stories from the quirky, clever, and downright scandalous personalities who shaped our county to the places and events that bore witness to spectacular milestones in our past. They celebrate our county's heritage while enriching its future. Become a member or find out more about events and programs that the organization promotes. Visit SonomaCountyHistory.org. And next, Go Local. Go Local is a community marketing co-op for locally owned independent businesses in Sonoma County. When you go local, you help preserve our community's distinct character, create local jobs, and strengthen community decision making. When we shop and bank local, we're helping to strengthen our local community and economy. For more information, visit golocal.coop. So golocal.coop. And with that awkward transition of the music going away, welcome to Remembering Ourselves. Again, my name is Colin Mutchler, and the show is about looking back at the music and culture of our past as a way to ground ourselves in relationship to each other and the natural world as we navigate these tumultuous times. And each show we bring on a guest from here somewhere in Sonoma County to bring some music from their life. Two songs from the early stage of life before you chose your own music, and two songs from the time period where you started to choose your own music and get really into music, and then two more from the current period. And we reflect on those times and your relationship to music, and hopefully as a way to, you know, deepen our connection to each other. So today I have with me Drew Farley, who lives close to me, very close to me. I live in Villa Grande. Drew is up in the terraces, we call it, up in the hills of Monterio. And I got to know him by living here. I think we first probably had a drink out in the middle of Villa Grande during the early pandemic. And he's an interesting creative soul. I first met him, he was helping out with the Rio Theater when they first were doing some film festival, because he's got a long history of working as like a technical director in nonprofit theaters. I'm happy to have him say more, but he's a good human and a very creative person. I'm really happy to have you on the show. Welcome, Drew.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so maybe the first question I wanted to ask before we jump into the music is, you know, what was it like to think about that question about like what are the songs of different phases of your life? I mean, you had heard at least one of my one of the early episodes of the show, and just what was it like to think about it?
Well, I definitely went back and forth in my mind about what I should try to include. Trying to distill down to six songs, two from each different eras, as you've divided it, it's pretty difficult. I mean, A, you want to sound cool, and B, you want to have music that's representative, and it's difficult to pick the ones that would be authentic. And I was trying to be authentic in a way that, like, you know, that's what I'd be listening to a lot in my car when I was driving to high school, or hanging out with friends, or in my college dorm room. So I was trying to think of, like, what would be on constant rotation at those times. That really took a little while to kind of distill down and really get it to what it would be. A lot of it, I was thinking about, like, maybe I don't want to There's a few other ones that it could have been where maybe I don't want to share that one.
So, no, I love that you brought up that.
There's definitely some ones where you're like, maybe not that one. Yeah.
No, I love that as a, yeah, as like it's always in the mix. I think, I feel like these days in the weird era that we live in where like the choices we make are publicly visible, there's always that question of like, you know, how it looks to others. But I think the, you know, the spirit of this is really just like, what's true for you? You know, everybody's got their own unique life story and you know, family that they came from or, you know, and experiences that they've had. And I'm glad that it sounds like you just, you know, you tried to take a listen back, like think back to your life and like what was really true for you. Because I don't think we've talked about it that much. Where did you grow up? Like what was going on in your early days, either around music or just in general, like paint the picture for me.
Oh, certainly. Well, I grew up in a few different areas. I was born in Novi, Michigan, and I lived in an adjacent town called Northville, Michigan, kind of the northeast suburbs of Detroit. My father worked in a hydromation, which was hydraulic articulated arm movements for automotive assembly. So his company was the company that produced and maintained those articulated arms. And then we moved to Kenosha, Wisconsin when I was about 7 or 8. And then I lived in Wisconsin for most of the rest there. And then, so music was...
How early did you guys move? What was the move date?
When I was probably, that would be 1988, 87, something like that.
How old were you?
I was 7 or 8.
Okay, that's similar for me, actually. I moved from Bellingham, Washington to New Jersey when I was about 7, so similar. I have like early memories, but most of my memories are from the second place. And what was going on musically during that era? Was there music on or not so much?
Oh yeah. My parents had music going. They always had records, always music in the car, driving around. That was definitely a big thing. There's a lot of, if you grew up in the Midwest, there's a lot of driving, specifically for family trips. We had family in Indiana, and also in Illinois and Chicago area. So it was a constant, you know, several hour drive, several times a year to visit family. So it was definitely a constant, parade of oldies and, show tunes and classic music. I think the predominant amount of music was really just, my mom kind of cleaning, bopping around to music, yeah, it was always fun there. I enjoyed it. Parents did have a cool variety of music with it. They were big into sound systems as well. So I think that kind of...
Is that where you got the technical background? Was it one of your parents that was into that kind of stuff?
Well, I was interested into it, but my brother got like way, way into it. He went full into kind of tube resistor, Altec Lansing receivers and speakers. He works for Georgia Tech now and doing stuff with computers I frankly don't understand. So,
and is he older or younger? Like,
the two of you? 9 years older than I am. So a lot of the music he was listening to definitely described a lot of what it was and kind of went back and forth. I chose two songs that were, one was my father's favorite and one was my mom's favorite. So, or at least, the favorite, singer. It could very well have been something that my brother listened to a great deal, which definitely informed my taste as well.
Yeah. It's funny. I think about that a lot as I've been talking to people, how it makes such a difference, like where you are in the birth order. If you're part of a large, you know, more than one kid family, you have like the parents influence, but then like the older sibling thing is just so major around like them bringing, at least in our era, maybe it's different now, but in our era it was like you would be exposed to things because of an older sibling. I was the oldest in my family, so I didn't have that, but I remember having friends that like they knew so much more about all these other kinds of music and art and culture because of that. If you had an older sibling, I didn't have that. Well, let's listen to these little pieces of these first two songs, and then we'll keep the conversation going. So the first song, I'm here with Drew Farley, remembering some of his relationship to music. And the first song is Long Back Black Veil from the one and only Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
10 years ago, on a cold, dark night, someone was killed 'neath the town hall lights. There were few at the scene, but they all agreed that the slayer who ran looked a lot like me. Now she walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. The scaffold was high and eternity near. She stood in a crowd and shed not a tear. But sometimes at night, when the cold wind moans in a long black veil, she cries over my bones.
That's Johnny Cash, the one and only. That's a really good song, man. I mean, I wasn't exposed to him until much later, but a beautiful song from Johnny Cash. And the second one I'm going to play is from The West Side Story. This is called Maria.
The most beautiful sound I ever heard.
Maria, Maria,
Maria,
Maria.
All the beautiful sounds of the world in a single word.
Side Story. That's a great. So that was like, was that one parent or the other? You guys, both your parents were kind of.
My mom was loving Maria. Certainly, there were a few different singers that she enjoyed that sang that song. I think that was the original cast there.
And for you, yeah. So you were saying like car was a lot. Like it was this radio in the car. And then when you were a kid, what did you guys have in terms of sound system? Was it mostly records or mostly tapes or
records and tapes?
Yeah. Yeah. Me, it was similar. CDs kind of came out when I was like, I think the first thing I ever bought was actually 2 cassette tapes. It wasn't until I was like maybe in high school that I started getting into CDs, but tapes were our primary thing too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I just turned 45. So, when I was in childhood and like the, tapes were the more portable way and access to it. And you always had a tape player, a tape deck in a car. That was standard for sure.
And then, so tell me, what was it like with your older brother? Like, 'cause it sounds like these two really songs are basically like from your actual parents. But then of course I'm imagining you, if he's 9 years older, like you're like a 9 or 10 year old. And this guy's like, you know, in high school, maybe even like get it post high school, like going, getting into some different kinds of stuff. Like, what was the kind of stuff your brother was into that you were exposed to?
Well, I definitely learned about Led Zeppelin, Michael Jackson, you know, any number of 80s kind of one-hit wonders through that time. Crowded House, Brian Eno, and so many different bands that he had because he, you know, he was getting more into high school for it. So, I mean, he was in high school in the 80s. So, I mean, it was John Hughes. It was exactly John Hughes. To this day, my brother loved those movies because that was very much like Breakfast Club when it came out. Like, he was in high
school. That was like about his high school kind of.
Essentially, yeah, because it was a Midwestern high school. He told stories about having people try to divide themselves up into, you know, the different stereotypes that Breakfast Club kind of demonstrated. In the Basket Case, I always thought was the best. Ally Sheedy.
I don't think I ever saw that. That's the best one.
Ally Sheedy for sure. I mean, that's Stone Cold Hottie right there for sure. kind of the epitome of the manic pixie dream girl. It still really annoyed me to no end that she had the kind of the makeup. And at the end of the movie, they kind of turned her into, you know, kind of the pretty girl, quote unquote. I thought she was gorgeous with eyeliner and big black Susie and the Banshee hair. I thought that was a degradation for her because that was sad. But
let me ask, like, were you? I find that in my family, I was like 6 years older than my sister, 3 years older than my brother. So at the 6 years older, it started to be like my sister was kind of into the stuff I was into. My brother was more like in reaction. You know, he was kind of curious about different things because we were so close in age. With your relationship with your brother and his tastes, were you like into the same stuff as him? Or was at some point you were like trying to, you know, kind of look for other things that were not him?
Well, yeah, I guess it was kind of reactionary where I would like listen to things that wasn't my brother. Or you know, sometimes there's antagonistic kind of relationships with your siblings at times.
Totally.
That 9-year age gap is pretty significant. I mean, when I was 6, you know, he was 15. So it's totally different lifetimes, or stages in life, I mean. So I think that, a lot of it was definitely from his ideas and what he was listening to. Then, of course, I wanted something different and, you know, 9 years, it's a whole different generation, of course.
Yeah, totally. And when did so when did you first start to get into your own music where you like really were exploring it yourself, either listening or going to shows? Like, when did you start getting into it yourself?
Probably, 12, 13, 14, in that range there was when I was really interested. There was a great radio station called Q101.
Shout out to
Q101 from Chicago. And that was definitely the alternative music or like college rock or whatever it would be defined as at the time. That was definitely, where I would hear all sorts. I mean, certainly Nirvana was a huge, huge effect on it.
Yeah, I remember that moment too. That was a big moment.
Yeah, I mean, the distorted guitars, Soundgarden, Nine Inch Nails. All of those different things that just come out. There's so many different types of bands. If you could just sit here, have a radio program of me just listing band names, and that wouldn't be very fun.
but that was for you. That was the wave that you started to really be your own, like embrace your own style of music that was different from either your parents or your brother.
Yeah, I think so. It was definitely that kind of music. And of course, my friends introduced me to different ones. My friend Aaron Doyle kind of introduced me to David Bowie, and then of course that had its own trajectory from that by itself.
Yeah, because tell me, because honestly, I think I never really got that. Like, I never got exposed to Bowie at that time frame. Like, I'm like curious about David Bowie, and I know he's so influential for so many people, but he wasn't part of my own journey. So I'm curious, like, as a teenager, you know, getting exposed to Bowie at that time, like, what was it like for you? It seems like for many people, it's like a really cool thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I kind of got into it through Ziggy Stardust and Spiders from Mars. It was the kind of the first album I really dialed down on with David Bowie.
What was it about it? Like, what was it about it that
I mean, it's a story, kind of concept to it, the chord progression, how he made the music, what it sounded like, the warble of his voice, and just kind of the nuance of it. And then, of course, I kind of learned also that he was touring with another band that I really enjoyed, which was Nine Inch Nails, in the Disturbed tour. It doesn't matter. But yeah, and that would have been 95. And to my endless shame and regret, I was not able to go to that show because I couldn't convince my mom to let my friend Aaron and I go to Chicago, in the suburbs of Chicago, not downtown, but, you know, go to a show in Chicago and see David Bowie and Nine Inch Nails play together. Opening band was a band that I also like called Prick, but that would have been amazing. It probably would have blown my mind as a 15-year-old, but I get it. And my mom didn't want me to go. It's okay. I get it. It's not her fault. Boy, that would have been a good show to see.
Yeah, I was Nine Inch Nails. I remember. I mean, I definitely was like impacted by their music because they had such a vibe, and the both the sound and the like mood of the music videos and stuff were just like so unique. You know, I hadn't really.
Transgressive. It kind of seemed like I was getting away with something by listening to them.
Yeah, it felt a little dirty in a way that was attractive at that age.
Who am I going to get in trouble or something?
Totally. Yeah.
I mean, it was that, and Tool had such difference in music and how it was going. I mean, all through junior high and early part of high school, I was in orchestra. I played the viola. And not very well.
Wait, say the instrument name again?
I played the viola.
A viola, like, which is like a kind of like a part of the violin family, right?
Yes, absolutely. So it would be more of the harmony in the backing up of the second violins.
And so, yeah, that's, I never even, thank you for bringing that up. I realize I haven't so far with my guests, I haven't talked that much about playing instruments. Like, I feel like I've had a few people that sing, but that's, so yeah. So you learned it in school, but you said poorly, like you weren't that into it.
Well, I was into it in the beginning, but, I think that I just didn't practice enough and I wasn't driven to it as much, but I did get really into classical music because of it. And I got frustrated that I wasn't immediately good, of course. And
that's a big challenge with creativity.
Yeah, exactly. So I tried to practice and do better with it. But of course, there's so many different things pulling your attention and your time at that point. And it wasn't a priority for me, but you know, maybe it should have at the time. But through that, I learned musicality and how chord progression works, what music is supposed to sound like, not supposed to, but why the mathematics of it. So how it sounds.
Yeah. The patterns of it all. I remember learning that too.
You have these two different things. It's a resonant quality of the hertz that allows it to sound pleasing or cacophonic in specific response to how the music is played. It's mathematics. So that is what I learned from those classes in either music theory or in actual playing.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting with that. And there's a lot of classical music I listened to a great deal. I mean, that all came from Bugs Bunny and Looney Tunes as well, because that's all opera and ballet music mostly. And certainly classical music that's playing with it. So I kind of got interesting introduction to a lot of that music through Looney Tunes, which is not uncommon, actually.
I love it. Well, if you're just joining me, I'm Colin Mutchler, and this is Remembering Ourselves, where we look back at the music and practices of our past. I'm here with Drew Farley from the Terraces of Villa Grande, and he is sharing some of his musical journey. We've listened to a few tracks from his early life, and now we're talking about his kind of like late childhood, early adult, when he was impacted by the grunge wave and also by learning viola and learning some of the classical music from the Looney Tunes, et cetera, which I think, you know, we'll talk about after this next set, may have influenced his work getting into the technical side of sound. So let's play these two songs that Drew chose to represent this kind of coming of age period. The first is from David Bowie, the great David Bowie. And I believe this is from the album that he did with Brian Eno, is what Drew said yesterday. So this is called Hello Space Boy. Hello, Space Boy, David Bowie, a classic. I love, somehow, talking about space, I feel like we're getting back to the space world. I feel like for a while there, people weren't talking about that stuff, but we're back in it with all the cosmic stuff happening. People want to go to Mars, et cetera. And the next song Drew chose for this period is called These Remains by My Life with the Thrill Kill Cut. My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult. The whatever that sound is, that, like, I don't know where that comes from, but it's beautiful sound.
Oh,
I love that music. I don't think I've heard that song. I don't know the band, but that's These Remains, My Life with the Thrill Kill Cut. Yeah, tell us about that song or that band. And
oh, certainly. Well, I mean, not all of their songs sounds like that. They've had number of different styles, you know, very Bowie-esque, where they have different stages throughout it. I believe that is from late 80s album, These Remains.
Cool.
I See Good Spirits and I See Bad Spirits. And that is, you know, I didn't hear it, you know, when I was nine, of course. I heard it.
When you were in your, like,
probably 17.
Teens. Cool.
Before college, and definitely had a high rotation in college there. I remember very specifically going to a all ages dance club, you know, wearing all black eyeliner. And you know, lights and the music playing, and you know, dancing with my friends, and I can picture it in my mind right now. If I close my eyes, it's
I'm trying to visualize the photograph of you with the black liner and everything. I kind of see this visual.
I had the black trench coat and everything. Yeah, you know, that was before Columbine, so it's okay.
That
was a fun time, you know. Definitely in high school, I would be more of a darker persona I try to put on, because that I was a theater kid, you know. I wasn't very athletic, I was a little skinny, so you know, I found out if I, you know, wear all black and wear a trench coat a lot, like the jocks would leave me alone. So,
yeah, that's real. Let's be real here. Yeah. High school in our time was hard, you know, for almost everybody. I think even the bullies didn't have a good time, so you were like a theater kid. I was better friends with the theater crew after I graduated, and ended up loving the theater crew. But in the actual high school, I was like sort of smart kids and a little bit of the athletic crew. But yeah, high school in the 80s and 90s was not, I don't know how it is now, but it was a challenging place then too.
And so I was in a lot of the AP classes and stuff too. So in the honors classes, and I was a smart kid. So it was,
try to stay away from the bullies, wear black.
It was a weird mix of it. In Kenosha, Wisconsin is an odd place. So,
and then where did you go? You mentioned college. Did you travel for college?
No, I didn't travel very far. I went to University of Wisconsin Madison,
which I've heard is a really cool school.
Oh, Wisconsin was great. Madison, Wisconsin is just a jewel of a city. It's absolutely fantastic there.
Yeah, I've heard great things. I think I visited one time, but like people say, it's just a really special town.
Oh, absolutely. Just a great town. I mean, I miss that time in that place. If I go there now, it's not the same, of course, because I'm not the same. But when I moved there, September, August 1998, that was, man, just the best time there. I would go back there.
And how long did you live there for?
I lived there for about 5 years. Just a fantastic, great town, great people, great fun there for it. It's entirely different now. I mean, like a bunch of the buildings that I even went to school have been knocked down and turned into new buildings. And there's more dorms and everything as well. But I mean, that's the way.
And is that the period of time when you started getting into what ended up becoming like your work in the technical side of the theater? Or was it where you move next?
I went to school for theater, and philosophy. Actually, I got 2 degrees in undergrad, both BAs, so philosophy, and then in theater. And then I lived in Chicago for a little while, suburbs of Chicago, not downtown, and a few various things. Lived in Michigan for a little bit as well, and then came back to Illinois, and then went to grad school to get my master's degree in technical direction, like a master of fine arts. And then that kind of traded into a job working at the Lyric Opera in Chicago and as a technical director, assistant technical director. And then that kind of turned into a job at the San Francisco Opera. And that turned into a job at Stanford.
Oh, is that what brought you out to California?
Yes, it was. Yeah. They were kind enough to help me move out here and to San Francisco. Hmm. And I was there for several years. And then that turned into a job working at Stanford at the Bing Concert Hall, where I got to really have my musicality and orchestral and different types of music really honed, because I was production director for a lot of what would happen for all the shows. I'd make sure all the shows happen on time and on budget. So I was there for a lot of the shows, running the actual production of the shows.
Yeah, because I'm trying to imagine, like, it must be such a...
So I got to listen to a lot of just amazing, amazing music.
You're actually responsible for the production of the actual sound, I assume you're like deeply involved in, like, which aspects of the show are you most intimately involved in? Is it the actual technical side of the lighting, sound? Is it the lighting? Is it the
setting and the lighting and the labor forecasting and labor budgeting, getting all the rental equipment? I wasn't the audio.
So it's more like the overall production leader. Like, you're making sure that everything happens well. Like the success is
job, just as you say.
It's good and it's on budget and no one's yelling at each other too much.
Yeah. There was also a lighting director and there was an audio director and I was the technical director.
And I'm curious that you didn't end up choosing any of the music from that, from those experiences. I'm guessing it's just because it was more like job music, but
it could have very well been a lot of those ones for sure.
Yeah. Cause is it basically like, say something about what is that music? Like what was the music?
Oh, well, I have some recordings from that I made as well. That I we made recordings for a lot of the people, and we would give them, you know, the CD afterwards. And I may or may not have made copies for myself once or twice. certainly, a lot of that music would go anywhere from Baroque to orchestral, classical. There was a lot of world music. All sorts of different types, like rock and roll. It was a huge cross section of all the different types of styles.
I'm curious to ask you, like, what different genres of music, how they feel differently to you, like how you use differently. I know for me it's true that, like, classical music and to a certain degree like the kind of modern version of it, which is maybe like the lo-fi, like, you know, kind of like I enjoy that instrumental and not a lot of words. Like, I use in a different way to like calm me down and to set mood versus like something where like the lyrics matter a lot to me and I'm like really wanting to like sing along or, you know, have my body move
for it. I mean, that's why people like live music. And that is why symphony orchestras, and that's why orchestral and ballet and opera are such interesting factors. I get really frustrated when you see commercials like making fun of opera or something like that. You know, they're falling asleep because it's really boring. Mm-hmm. That's, I can't swear, right? But that's a bunch of BS. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anything more interesting. Just for an example, like a lot of people have seen the movie Shawshank Redemption, right? Mm-hmm. And that scene where Andy Dufresne, Tim Robbins, plays that opera music, and it fills all of the everywhere of the prison, and there's just like two beautiful birds singing, and he talks about that. But that's, if I remember right, that is basically two women plotting to try to entrap Falstaff into so they can have power over him. So they're going to try to be body around him and try to get him to do things and manipulate him. So,
you don't know what these actual musicers about. They were all, it's mostly a lot about sex and destruction and death and dying. And I mean, Tosca, there's a part where she's been trying to, you know, trying to be coerced into having sex with this guy. And instead she stabs him with a knife saying, "This is Tosca's kiss," and stabs him to death. I mean, and then she throws herself from the battlements. I mean, there's so many different things that people don't know because they don't want to spend the time to listen to. But that's kind of a whole thing I was talking about. I'm sorry. But specifically is in kind of the, does it sound and feel different? Yes, absolutely. Because it's a live thing. Like if you have... Bach or something, right? Playing, everyone knows what it sounds like in their head because they heard a recording for it. Or Brahms or Beethoven or Mozart. Everyone has heard these through whatever reason. Maybe it's in a commercial or it's in a movie or they actually listened to it because they chose to. But that's just a recording of that time of it. The fact is that you go to see these different musicians and these different directors is because they have a flair of a way to make it sound a little bit different. They put their stamp on it. There was the LA Symphony, Dudamel, had this very flamboyant conductor, and people would go all over to see him, or like the opera's new conductor, a woman. Her name escapes me off the top of my head. Can't remember. Doesn't matter. But she's absolutely just electric and does things differently than others would do. So it makes it sound a little bit different, a little bit new, a little different spin to it.
Which that's
not
beautiful.
Just the same music that's played again and again. It's different every single time. Even if you want to go see it played, the exact same production, the exact same singers, the exact same director, the exact same conductor, the exact same musicians, it'll be different every time, because how could it not be?
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Very similar, but if you are really paying attention, you'll notice that, that was a little bit different there. It's darker tone here. And I think that's really, really reason why that this live music in this industry is so amazing and wonderful.
People
really get it as much as what they should, because it's you have to kind of get into it.
Yeah, the in-person experience is what it's about. Drew Farley here breaking it down, dropping some serious wisdom about live classical music. This is not about a recording, people. I know we think everything's just a CD or a Spotify playlist or whatever, but embodied real performances by real people bring things to life in a way that you cannot explain easily, but are very true. And I'm here with Drew Farley. This is Remembering Ourselves.
That kind of went off tangent.
I know, but now I appreciate it. That's kind of, I'm glad to be surfaced that, because that's kind of part of your own wisdom and experience given your work. So I'm glad you shared that. Drew has worked for a long time within the kind of theater, technical side of the theater space. And we're here remembering his relationship to music, you know, which does include that as well. We each show we bring on a person from somewhere in Sonoma County, in West County, and to share about the different songs from different parts of their life and hear about that and talk about their relationship to music and to themselves and to building community in these times. So the next we're going to play the next two songs that Drew chose, and then we'll talk about that. These next two that he chose, the prompt was basically like songs from these times, you know, from current times. So we'll hear more about them after I play it. But let me just play it, and then we'll get into it. The first one is from the band The National, and it is the song Blood Buzz, Ohio.
My shirt.
And to be fair, that's from 2010, if I remember right.
That's a beautiful song. Blood Buzz, Ohio, the National. That's a beautiful song. Let's talk about it in a little bit. And the next song Drew chose from this this most recent period is called 39 by Design by Drab Majesty.
Great name.
Yeah, totally. All right, one sec. By Design, Drab Majesty. I'm here with Drew Farley from the Terraces of Villa Grande. I'm Colin Muxler, and this is Remembering Ourselves, where we look back at the music and culture of our past as a way to connect with each other and deepen our relationships to our communities and help navigate these crazy times that we're alive for. Drew, tell me about that music and relationship to the current times. The thing we haven't talked about yet is like, how'd you get up to Monterio? You know, how'd you get up to Villa Grande, which you can weave into the story? Because I know that, you know, this last chapter we were talking about was when you were down in the Bay and, you know, in South Bay and San Francisco. But curious to hear more about these songs you chose and these times.
Oh, sure. I got into the National later than 2010 there. I think it was more like 16, 17. I had just come back from Mississippi because that's where my parents were living at the time. And my wife got me into the National, and I was working.
Shout out to Kelly.
Oh, yeah. My wife, Kelly. She's awesome. And she had talked about wanting to go see the National, and they were playing in Berkeley at the what's the amphitheater there?
The Greek?
Yeah, the Greek. Thank you. And I was doing some work for Cal Performances, did some acting work for them as well. And so I had an in there, and coming back from Mississippi is because my mom had just passed away. So they kind of took pity on me and got me tickets, and I got to sit like right by the sound booth there. So that was pretty cool.
And a meaningful moment for you to be going to a show.
Oh, yeah. But it was good to get out and do something and feel something different. So I hadn't heard a lot of this band's music, except for just a couple ones that Kelly really liked that she was playing a lot when we were driving. And it was really fun to listen to, and I really got into it. And the opening band was Portugal the Man as well, which is another great band. They're from Alaska. The National's from Ohio, but I think they formed in Brooklyn. But really great music. I really liked his baritone singing. The main singer there is really quite excellent. Leading up into the 2019, we were looking to move away from what we were doing. The problem with working in theater and production is that you work a lot of nights and you work a lot of weekends. Mm. And so you miss a lot of holidays, you miss a lot of birthdays, you miss weddings, all these events because you're at work, because that's when shows happen, is at night and
weekends. Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but it's true with like people that work in those kind of in the industries that people like to go on the weekends.
Yep. So we wanted to do something a little bit different. Kelly's job, luckily, was doing really, really well. And so she was making more than twice what I was at the time. So it made sense to try to do something different. So we were looking to move away into the woods. And we almost bought a house in Forestville in 2019 in December, but that didn't work out. And then, of course, COVID happened, and we were able to get in while the rates were still very low. And we bought our house in April, May in 2020, and moved in June, early June 2020. And we've been here ever since. And, I couldn't imagine a better place to be right now. I like the idea that the nearest stoplight is a 20-minute drive into Guerneville. it's really quite lovely. I have a quarter acre, and it's 40-some redwoods on my property, so it's densely shadowed, not a lot of sunlight, but I have a lot of sun come in through my skylights, and we have a nice place, and it worked out very well. We actually were able to buy a house for what we were paying in rent in San Francisco, so it was a really great deal. And then, those goth days, I think the other band, the goth days of my youth, it kind of came back around with a lot of people, because there's in 2017, 18, 19, in Los Angeles, there was a bunch of bands that were kind of recreating that kind of goth sound, like The Cure or The Smiths or Susie and the Banshees. And so that's where they have Drab Majesty. Like, that's all 2017.
Oh, so Drab Majesty, like, is a current band.
The current
that's
band.
Playing that sounds like that similar sound.
In the 80s, exactly. So
cool.
It's a really cool kind of stylization that they're doing at that time, which I think is really fascinating. Because a lot of those people, I think a lot of those guys are around the same age as we are. And, they have a nostalgia for that time and place of that 80s music, how it helped.
That's really interesting. I feel like there's a few other people I knew that are younger than us that are, maybe in their late 20s, early 30s now, that were playing in bands in San Francisco that were similarly like trying to play basically how it sounded, like that kind of the kind of hippie rock from the early 60s or mid 60s. And I was like, oh yeah, that sounds like that other stuff. Like, cause it's like something to play. So yeah, it's like nostalgia music. And I think because everything's recorded these.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you still get the feeling, but it's like modern, modern storytelling and content, the lyrics are modern, but the feel is similar from the other time. And I think there's something about that, in an era where you can find different sounds. It's almost like time travel culturally, where you're trying to revisit a particular sound that you felt from when you were younger. And that's really cool.
Yeah,
so Drab Majesty.
Yeah. Make it new again is really fun. Yeah. They're, I want to say they formed in 2015 in Los Angeles, something like that. And several of the other, if I remember right, it's just two gentlemen together, playing, and, they kind of disguised themselves because they didn't want to be recognized from the other bands that they were playing in, because one is from like a hardcore band, like a metal kind of, and he didn't want A to be recognized, and B, he didn't want anybody, they liked his other band, so they wanted to come and see him. He kind of wanted to be incognito, to like just have his own inertia as opposed to from his other bands, which I thought was kind of a cool thing.
That's cool.
So their act is kind of like wearing like big long robes with like white pancake makeup and like long wigs with sunglasses, like two guys kind of statues playing this synth.
Well, I mean, Drew, my main takeaway from this conversation is that in the next like Monterio or Villagrand gathering that we have, that's kind of costume direction, or there's, costumes encouraged, I really want to lean in the direction of this music and the eyeliner black, like go back to high school kind of thing. Oh, especially man, given that's fun. Your true spirit. I want to like, I can play, I can jump in that direction too. I know yeah. we are kind of running out of time. So I think we should close it here, but I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate you and Kelly and the community that we're a part of so much. And I just like appreciate you being part of this, you know, this experiment, this radio show, and I hope that we will continue to, you know, be in relationship around music and culture and art here in West County and here in Monterey Villa Grande for a long time to come.
Let's get it. It's gonna be great. It's just the beginning.
I was, as I listened to all your music, and I was like thinking about what song to go out with. I ended up choosing something that I hope. Ooh. Is a good choice from your perspective, because I don't know. You might be like, oh, bad choice, dude. But it was something like in the spirit of the vibe that I heard, and then also in the spirit of revisiting the music of our life, I chose from somewhere in that general time frame, Forever Young by Alphaville.
That's cool. That's cool.
I know it's not exactly
great.
It, but it's like...
Wow, this
I
is
like,
great, man. Oh.
I will see you, everybody.
Absolutely.
We'll see you in a few weeks.
I mean, this is definitely thematically aligned.
Let's dance in style. Let's dance for a while. Heaven can wait. We're only watching the skies. Hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. Are you gonna drop the bomb or not? Let us die young or let us live forever. We don't have the power, but we never say never. Sitting in a sandpit, life is a sharp trip, the music's for the sad man. Can you imagine when this race is won? Turn our golden faces into the sun. Praising our leaders, we're getting in tune. The music's played by the madman. Forever young.
It's 4 o'clock.
This is KOWSLP in Occidental. Community radio serving Santa Rosa and West Sonoma County, and always streaming worldwide at cowsfm.com. Free speech, no bull.